I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. Quick announcement, the Big Change program reopens tomorrow. That's Wednesday, November 23rd. Check your email for a link to read all about it and register. I'll be sending out rolling emails so that there are certain folks who are member of Healthy Habit Huddles or private coaching clients, things like that, who get to pre-board. We're opening it up to about 60 people this time. And given my business partner Josh Lajani's meteoric rise to fame with his appearance on the cover of Runner's World magazine this week, I expect those slots will go pretty quickly. So check it out, bigchangeprogram.com. You can read all about it now, even if you can't sign up, and I will send an email as soon as the link is ready for it. And now to today's episode. My guest, Doug Schmidt, is an enrichment teacher and health and wellness coordinator for his upstate New York school district. Now, I have a PhD in health education and a master's in public health, so I know the sorts of thing that health educators typically do in school districts. Things like stress reduction, smoking cessation, and getting teachers to like take the stairs instead of the elevators, if there are elevators, and park farther away from the front entrance and wear Fitbits and get in their steps and things like that. And these are all laudable and noble goals to be sure, but they're pretty far from what we in the plant-based community know is possible and really powerful. So Memorial Day 2008, Doug's in his backyard. At the age of 49, he has a heart attack. And of course, all the stress reduction, abstinence from cigarettes and daily steps could not have overcome and did not overcome the effects of half a century of the standard American diet, because Doug was a healthy guy, so he thought. He was active. He and his wife were hiking across the peaks of the Adirondacks just a month before the heart attack. And he was carrying an extra 60 pounds, which in his mind kind of didn't really categorize him as high risk, because everybody he knew looked kind of the same. And so despite this active lifestyle and a fat camouflaging wardrobe, Doug received a stent in his left anterior descending artery, was incredibly grateful to be alive, and decided then and there that he didn't want to spend the rest of his life on medications. So he began Googling. And as so many of us who Google discover, he found Caldwell Esselstyn. And from there, it was a journey and a process. And fast forward, Doug is at his ideal weight. He's the picture of health. And not only is this a personal journey, but Doug took seriously his work as a health and wellness coordinator in a school district to start conducting Plant Pure pod jump starts for other faculty members in the school. So he's really spreading it out into the school, into the community, into the kids' classrooms, and is really sparking a quiet one-person revolution in health in his neck of the woods. So, without further ado, Doug Schmidt, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Howard.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, let's jump right in and tell us what you do.
I am what they call an enrichment teacher in a primary school in upstate New York. That's my main job. My secondary job for the district is I'm their health and wellness coordinator.
Okay. Is that a job that you invented or created for yourself, or is that something that like exists, like schools have that?
Schools have that now. At least the schools up in our area do. Schools have been, due to a school wellness policy that the government came out with, they have to form a health and wellness committee. And so typically the head of the health and wellness committee is the health and wellness coordinator or director who oversees all that.
Gotcha. So I'm guessing that you're a fairly different health and wellness coordinator than the typical in terms of the interventions that you promote.
Most health and wellness coordinators, they're looking at stress reduction in the workplace. They're looking at physical fitness, smoking cessation applications. With me, I do all that, but I'm also trying to address some of the other problems in the district, like obesity and things through diet and taking it a little different tack.
Yeah. Awesome.
With the whole food plant-based.
Whole food plant-based diet. We've gotten to the central plot point here. As absolutely zero people listening to this will be surprised by. So how did you come to it? How did you discover a plant-based diet? What's your journey?
So, and Memorial Day 2008, I was walking in my yard and had a pain in between my shoulder blades that then radiated to my chest that then took me to the ground. And little did I know at the time, I was having a heart attack. I was 49 at the time. My wife rushed me to the hospital because we didn't know it was a heart attack at the time. And my doctor said, you should get to emergency. So she drove me in, and they hooked me up to everything, and they're saying, you're having a heart attack. And after they took me in, they put a stent in my lower anterior descending artery. And a day later, I walked out with some new hardware in me and was glad to be alive. But at 49, I didn't want to be stuck on medication the rest of my life. You know, what's the long-term effect of these drugs? So I immediately went out on the internet and said, what can I do for heart disease? And stumbled across Dr. Esselstyn's work, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. Mm. And with that, I looked at it. I read it. I also read Ornish at the time, and I said, this is too severe. I can't do all that, which, you know, now I almost laugh at it. But we did cut back. My wife and I, we cut back on red meat, processed things, dairy for the most part. But a year later, I had a scare. I was rushed by ambulance to the hospital again. Luckily it was a research hospital and they said, yes, there's some blockages, but we're going to just watch them. We're not going to stent anymore. So I think I got lucky there.
So that's when I started taking
things seriously.
Gotcha. So let me back up with you a little bit. So you found out you're having a heart attack. It sounds like you and your wife were pretty shocked at the age of 49. How is your health and like weight, and like, was this like a bolt out of the blue, or like, you know, well, what was the trajectory psychologically leading up to that?
Well, both my wife and I are pretty active. We go camping, hiking, canoeing, kayaking. In fact, the month earlier, we were up in the Adirondacks in early spring doing a hike across a couple of the high peaks, Porter Cascade up in the Adirondack Mountains. And we think, you know, gee, if it happened there, I'd be a goner. So we thank our lucky stars there. But I think at the time I probably said, I'm not as bad as other people. You know, I think a lot of times we have a skewed sense of what's healthy, especially when we're not healthy. And yes, I had an extra 60 pounds of weight on me. And even though I was never diagnosed with high blood pressure or high cholesterol, it was working in my body. And I just was lucky that I guess that I had never had issues before.
So it wasn't something you didn't self-identify as someone who was at risk. You were just like portly.
Exactly. Well, and even at portly, and you know, people tell me at school, I never thought you were fat. Well, I hid some of that, you know, and compared to other people in the building or other people that I work with, I was skinnier than some of them. You know, I was a 49-year-old man with those extra pounds. And even though I might have been active and may have had some, you know, seemed enthusiastic about stuff, I think I hit it. You know, I'd buy clothes that were a little bigger so it didn't show, and wore clothing that fit so it didn't look as bad. But now in retrospect, yeah, I was overweight and needed help.
So I'm also struck by something you said that makes you very atypical, which is, I didn't want to be stuck on this medication the rest of my life. Like, that's not how Americans think. what made you say that? It's like, you know, that's like, you know, a rite of passage, and you're in your 50s and you go on a bunch of meds.
I think because seeing my parents themselves, and seeing my in-laws who were on so many medications, my parents have since passed, but they retired and they thought they were going to be great, but their health wasn't great. And they started taking medicines and they had to start working to pay for the medicines, and they continued their bad health. And I just said, there's got to be a better way. And I didn't know if there was a better way. I was hoping there was a better way. And luckily, through a great internist, I was able to find one that would work with me towards that goal of getting off all medication. Mm.
And so when you went on the internet, like, finding Esselstyn is, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, and this was, 2008, 2009, like, good luck to you. Like, how did you come across him and not immediately go, oh, he's the quack that a few people are making fun of, the real doctors?
I think probably, and like a lot of people, when I came out of that hospital, I was in this sort of shock. Oh, my gosh, my mortality, you know, was thrown in my face. And I felt like I had a second lease on life. So, but also, I was desperate. I was, you know, I'm also a chicken. I don't want to have to go back in the hospital and get cut open in any way, shape, or form. So if I can change something, and I knew my diet was not perfect at all. Not that I had a lot of processed foods, not that I had a lot of fried foods, but I loved cheese, and I loved baked goods, and I loved a lot of things. So I figured, you know, diet, it made sense to me when I did find Esselstyn that diet would play a part. And reading Esselstyn's book, it's sort of like, that makes sense. It makes sense. Whatever you take in is going to affect your body. It has to. So I never thought of Esselstyn as a quack, and Ornish I never thought of as a quack. I just thought I was still somewhat invincible. I wasn't that bad. I only had one step, you know, sort of deluding myself that I could get by and do it a little differently than what they recommended.
Uh-huh. So you're like, yeah, I could do this. You know, yeah, this diet would probably work, but it's not going to work for me because it's too hard to commit to. Was that kind of it?
Well, actually it was, well, I'll do some of it. You know, I'll eat more fruits and vegetables. I looked at the Heart Association website, which was sort of a mistake. And they said, well, here it says I can have 4 eggs a week. I'm only having 2 on the weekends. How bad can that be? I'm less than that, so I should be good. And I'm not eating red meat at all, and I cut away pork. All I'm eating is chicken or poultry and fish. That should be okay. But then when I had that scare, okay, let's start getting serious. And then it was sort of, even then I wasn't following Esselstyn Exactly. I was having oil. I figured, well, I'm, you know, I've cut out all the dairy. I cut out all the meat. I'm just having fruits, vegetables, grains, and I'm using the oil. And the weight did start to drop off, and things did get better. My internist, he would see me every 3 to 6 months, take blood work, and he could tell if I was improving or not. But what would happen is during the wintertime, I'd eat more bread and other stuff, and I'd gain weight over the winter. And anytime my weight got up over 200, my sugars started spiking, and my doctor said, you're borderline diabetic. If you don't control your weight, you're going to have issues. Okay. So I focused more on eating cleaner, but we were still having a lot of the oil. And then I had issues with statin drugs. My first statin caused me to have plantar fasciitis. The second one they put me on caused my toes to splay. It felt like somebody was spreading them apart. And the third one, which was Crestor, it caused generalized muscle weakness throughout my body. I was walking around with a hiking stick because I couldn't get up and down the stairs without it. I felt like I was 95 instead of 50-something. And so I went to my doctor, and he says, it's the statins. You do not tolerate statins well. So we have two choices here. We can either put you on another statin and see how you do, but we already know you don't do well on statins, or we can do it all with diet. And that's when I knew it came all down to me. And this is sort of where what I was telling my doctor from the get-go. You know, I'll do my part if you do your part. And here he was saying, it's all up to you, buddy. And that's when we dropped the oil. That's when we looked closer and closer at what we were eating and consuming. And that's when we picked Esselstyn back up. And we had a lot of those other foods in our diet, sort of transition foods like the diet cheese and those things. And we became real good at reading those labels. And, at the time, we only use diet cheese once a week, you know, in this tofu scramble that we made. Well, cutting out oil meant reading more. And even though we didn't have a lot of processed things in the house, that was one of them, and that was gone. So we began eating cleaner and cleaner and cleaner, and the weight just started falling off. And probably the bulk of the weight dropped off in the past 2 years. And, you know, when I was 225, 230 when it all began, and now I'm 167 today. And my hopes when I was at 2-something was, gee, if I could get down to 185, I'd be great. I never in a million years thought I'd be down at 167, which is as light as I was in high school.
So you mentioned we a lot. So that's you and your wife.
My wife came on this journey with me right from the get-go. I probably couldn't have done it without her. I think I have a tendency to be very laid back. And in this case, we couldn't be laid back. So she goes, let's go for a hike. Let's, you know, what are we going to make tonight? And both of us went out, and we're foodies. We love food. And we couldn't have stayed on this diet if we didn't find recipes that were tasty and appealing. And so we scoured cookbooks, websites, Pinterest for those whole food, plant-based, no oil recipes. And we've modified recipes that we like to make them compliant. And we've had a ball. And we've done it together. And she's lost her weight. She still has some more to go. She gets angry with me because she says, yes, you guys, you lose weight more quickly than we do. And they go, I'm sorry. But my wife, Sherry, has been the rock that has helped me through all this to get to where I am now.
So she she was ready to make whatever changes, like whenever you gave the word, she was like, you know, like,
well, she actually, not that she took charge. I mean, both sort of took charge, but she went a step further. She took the eCornell plant-based nutrition course, where she got all that knowledge from that course that just gave her the science and medical aspects behind it.
Wow! So she basically took on a part-time career as a nutritional expert to help you and herself.
True. So, you know, like, you know, if I had a question, well, why do we have to cut this? And she could give me the document or the literature and, oh, okay. So that helped me. And she's very good with the numbers and things. So that worked. And I am pretty adept in the kitchen. So if we found something, I can modify that. We can make that work. So it was a real team effort to do this. So, you know, an average evening, both of us are in the kitchen side by side prepping some part of the dinner, which makes that easy for everybody.
Okay, so there's a happily ever after so far story, but that's just the beginning, right? Because now we can talk about your work with the Victor Central School District up in Victor, New York, which I guess is like near Rochester. It's between Rochester and Syracuse, sort of close to Rochester, right?
Yeah, it's on the outskirts of Rochester. It's exit 45 off the thruway, right next to Rochester. And last year, the athletic director for the district, one of his side jobs basically was this position of health and wellness coordinator. And I think he wanted to delegate some of his responsibilities off. So he asked people if anybody was interested in this position. And a couple of people said, Doug, you should, you know, that's right down your alley. So I did. And I wasn't sure where I was going to take things or how it would play out, but I said, okay. And by this time, we had seen Plant Pure Nation. We've been following the development of the Plant Pure pods. My wife and I decided to make Victor Central one of the pods. And in the back of my head, I was saying, could I use this as a tool to put in a 10-day plant-based jumpstart program based on the Plant Pure Nation format? And once I got in the position, I have a committee that I have to deal with, and I didn't want to come on too strong. You have to play politics when you're doing this, especially in something like a school district. But luckily, through our health insurance people, they have a consortium of all the school districts in the area, and all the health and wellness coordinators get together, and we talk about initiatives we want to put forward. And there's a small amount of money involved that we can tap. So I talked to the director of this consortium of school districts. I said, I'd like to do this jumpstart. Is that something that we could use our funds for? And he says, yes, definitely. Just, you know, work up the numbers and see I'll see what we can do. And so I got the price of the food from Plant Pure Nation for their frozen food, which was a 10-day supply. Both lunch and dinner, and sort of made up my own little kit through them. I thought it was important that we should have the food so the people didn't have to think about cooking and making the food. But I also wanted to give them a resource that they could use in case they wanted to further their education afterwards or even during. So we also had them buy the Plant Pure Nation cookbook. And the insurance company sponsored half of the cost of the food and half the cost of the book and covered cost of the biometric screenings for before the 10 days and after the 10 days. Okay. So the cost to the employee ended up being something like $78. And $78 for 10 days worth of food, I thought it was a pretty good deal, and they got a cookbook out of it.
So I'm curious about the politics, because, like, it seems like this went through way easier than it should have. Like, did you not have, like, dietitians talking about the dangers of a vegan diet, and what about B12 and vitamin D and carnitine, and didn't you have pushback? Like, why did this work?
Well, what is interesting, on the Health and Wellness Committee, we do have a couple nurses and a couple dietitians, nutritionists from the University of Rochester, in Rochester, on our committee. And one of the meetings, one of them did, you know, mention, you know, the worst thing we have with vegans and vegetarians that come into our offices is low B12 and low iron. And I go, but if they're eating properly, you know, and this is only 10 days. And basically there was general consensus, sure. And I don't know if it was just because I was new in the position, but also I have a tendency to, you know, push forward until somebody says no. And even then I keep pushing forward. So in this case, nobody said no. They just were saying, you know, you better be careful of this, you know, and I said, you know, these people are still under the care of their doctor, and it's only 10 days. So the committee had no problem with it. The district had no problem with it. And with the funding, you know, I did sort of use, well, you know, we have support from our insurance company. So, and when I talked to the district, I said, we have support from our health and wellness committee. So played the politics a little bit to help push it through. And I put out a call to the district, to all the staff. I go, we have a pilot program. We're going to try. We only have room for 30 participants. When I get 30, I have to close it down. Within 3 hours, I had 30 participants. Wow. There was that much demand for the program.
What did people know about it? Like, did they know the details of, like, what they'd be eating, or that they were going to get, like, food for 10 days for $3 a meal? Or like when you think about yourself that first time when you looked at the diet and you said, well, yeah, maybe, but this is too hard. Like, how much did they know about what they were going to get into for 10 days?
I don't think they really knew a lot. I did put in the letter and I explained it briefly. I said, you know, that this is a 10-day pilot. You'll receive whole food, plant-based, no oil food for 10 days. We'll check your biometrics before. We'll check your biometrics after. And this is based on the work of, you know, these doctors, you know, worked like Dr. Esselstyn, McDougall, you know, I wanted to make sure they didn't think it was some sort of fad diet or something that was coming through. It was just, you know, a solid, medically sound program. And we did have in January of last year, and the jumpstart was in April, January last year, we did have an informational meeting for the staff on whole food plant-based. We had about 25 people sign up. So some were interested, some were aware. Not all those 25 ended up in the pilot, though, which was positive. But so there was some talk and buzz in the district a little bit. And I would share some information through a district newsletter, health and wellness newsletter I had that I would put out. But I kept that pretty light because I didn't want people thinking I had an agenda, even if I did have an agenda. Uh-huh.
So you're basically just sort of enticing people, and then you're going to, like, hit them with the details once they're already committed, as opposed to, like, trying to convince people of the...
Pretty much. when they came in, for a for the first meeting, where I laid it all out, informational meeting after they were selected for the pilot. I had a presentation that explained what whole food plant-based eating was. I shared some information from the movie Plant Pure Nation. I recommended that they view it. Also shared my story. And that seemed to be enough. There were tons of questions, and there were tons of questions during the Jumpstart itself. But though most of them were answered, I sent out a daily email newsletter to everybody in the Jumpstart that also had video clips from nutritionfacts.org or things from Forks Over Knives, inspirational stories to help support them through the 10 days. And that's one thing everybody in the Jumpstart said, we're going to miss your informational newsletters, because that really carried the day for a lot of the people.
So I got to ask you what was in them, because I don't know if we talked about this, but I was working with Nelson Campbell during the initial Jumpstarts in Mebane, and I created a 10-day email sequence that included videos that I made explaining things. And like, I didn't really get a lot of feedback from it. And so I have no idea if it was useful or any good, but I'm wondering what you created and how you thought about what kind of support people would benefit from.
Well, initially it was a definite blend. One, I wanted to make sure the science was in there somehow. So, why no dairy? So there was no dairy in there for some, a video from nutritionfacts.org. Then I wanted an inspirational story that they could latch onto that would maybe resonate with them. So I looked on Forks Over Knives for a married couple, because we had three or four couples in the pilot group. So I wanted, here's a couple, and this is how they were successful and their story from there. I also wanted to show them the power of this. So I have one of the McDougal success video stories that I had put in there. The video, I'm trying to remember her name. She was a stage 3 cancer survivor.
Ruth Heydrich?
And every time, no, the young girl, she was 28 or early 30s.
Oh, okay, don't know that one.
And I'm trying to remember her name, and she just glows in the video. And my wife and I cry every time, because here's this young, vibrant woman who was on death's door, and she survived all because of a whole food plant-based diet. So I wanted people to see those things, because those were things we found and were inspired by. And Sherry would share information. Oh, you got to go find this video or that video to help shore them up. And also, so they have the information that when somebody says, why are you on this whole food plant-based thing? It's just another thing like paleo. It's just another thing like, whatever this diet is. And so we wanted to empower them so they could also talk about it. Maybe not real strongly, but at least they knew in their hearts there's some value to this. And each day, we up the ante a little bit more with more science, more of the inspirational stories. I think I even used Josh Lajani in one of them, because that's where I first read about him, was in Forks Over Knives. It seemed to work. People afterwards, I did a survey 2 months afterwards, and I asked things like, how have you changed your diet? Are you going to stay on this diet or this way of eating long term? There were some people said, absolutely, this is the only way I'm going to go. There were other people said, we have adopted some of the parts. We've eating more fruits, vegetables. We've cut dairy almost across the board. Everybody cut. So I have to go back in my newsletters and see, okay, what did I say about dairy What were those videos that I used? Because that was the most powerful thing that came out of it for a lot of people, was they cut the dairy. But it seemed between that, and I think the other advantage we have as a school district, a lot of the people cross each other's paths during the day, and they became a support network during the day for each other. You know, they would say, "Hey, how'd you like that entree? Oh, I didn't like that one. Oh, I like this one though." Or just, "How's it going?" You know. And to this day, I'll see clusters of people in different buildings that were part of the pilot program talking, and I walk up and they're talking about a recipe or they're talking about their most recent weight loss. And it's great. I think, in a small community like that of teachers, it has worked extremely well.
Gotcha. Now, the jumpstart, as you mentioned, includes lunches and dinners. So it doesn't include breakfast, snacks, and, meals for kids. So what kind of support did you give people to be compliant around the two meals that they didn't have to think about?
Well, the Plantier people did put out a packet for working through the Jumpstart, which had some suggestions for breakfast in there. Sherry and I also shared our recipes for a couple breakfast items that we use. We also shared with them a hummus recipe that Sherry had come up with, and talked about what we had for snacks. We gave them our recipe for roasted potatoes, which great roasted potatoes. We say when we're hungry, we really get that craving and we're starving. We use these and we dip them in ketchup or mustard as a snack. And so they had those things to go with. And people would ask, "Well, gee, what do I do for breakfast? You know, I can't have my yogurt anymore." And basically, we referred them to Essie's bowl, the bowl of oats and fresh fruit and things. And people were very satisfied. The takeaway for most people was that there was more than enough food for them to eat, and they never felt starved or deprived, which was great because, even us going into this, we weren't sure how the Jumpstart would work. We just believed that it would work, but we had never actually seen the development except in the movie. So nothing but rave reviews. And we had after the last biometrics, we had a little celebration we brought in Rip Esselstyn's lasagna, Raise the Roof lasagna. We made that and brought it into the group, and they all had that. And we just shared about the 10 days and their results and what people thought. And it was interesting. Even the people, the company that we had the biometrics in, do the biometrics, they were surprised at the changes. They were surprised that 10 days could make that big of a difference.
Huh. So what were the, if you can share the aggregates or any of the numbers, like what were the initial biometrics? Like how bad were these folks?
Some were bad. Some were not too bad. I mean, we had a nice cross section. Out of the 30 people, when we started, we had 12 of the 30 had cholesterol over 200. Two of those people had a total cholesterol over 275. The other one had 313. So, we had a good portion that were pretty high with cholesterol. After the 10 days, all of them were within the optimum range for total cholesterol, except for the one who had the 313. But even he dropped 44 points with his cholesterol. So
that's like 15%.
Yeah.
In 10 days.
We had an overall drop of 50 points, average drop in total cholesterol for the group.
Uh-huh. I wonder if that person wasn't as entirely compliant, because the numbers I saw was like the higher it was, the bigger the drop.
Yeah, I'm curious. This person, he was a good sized man, but he also was coming off of he had some other medical issues earlier, and that's what brought him to this. His wife was on a lifestyle medicine program in the city that worked for her, which was whole food plant based. So he decided to try this. So I don't know, because I have no way of truly knowing.
Oh, you mean you haven't installed hidden cameras in all your participants' homes in their kitchen?
Yeah, I'm working on that for the next.
Yeah, I thought that was just protocol.
But,
let the record show I'm kidding.
Yeah, same here. but we had another lady. She had the 275 total cholesterol. Her blood glucose was 470. And after the 10 days, it dropped in the normal range, which, you know, that was amazing to her. That was a wake-up call to her. And both those two individuals, one lost 10 pounds in 10 days. The other one lost 15 pounds in 10 days.
That sounds pretty compliant.
Right. We had even the people who were like, one of our people was our athletic director. He decided to do it. And he goes, I eat pretty healthy. You know, he wasn't expecting anything. He just wanted to see what it was all about, basically. And even he lost 20, 30 points. I can't remember the exact number in his total cholesterol. So he was going, oh, maybe I'll start eating a little better.
Yeah.
So
do people understand that? Like, there's I think a belief, and I think it's not true, that any improvement, like, it's linear. Like, you know, you add a stalk of broccoli, that'll help. You add three stalks of broccoli, you take away some cheese, that'll help more. Do people understand, like, the jumpstart was constructed pretty extremely because, like, that's where you need to go to see results? Or did people feel like, well, like your athletic director, well, maybe I'll start eating a little better? You know what I'm asking?
Well, you know, it's yes. And the thing is, I think, you know, even within the whole food plant-based world at times, you have some people who say, you know, it's a journey. People get there. You can't force them along. And then you have, like, the stricter followers, and especially, like, the Esselstyn group, it's all or nothing. My wife will say, you know, Sherry will say, you know, you can't expect 100% results with 50% of the effort. I mean, if you're only doing this 50%, don't expect even 50%. You're not going to get the results you're thinking. And I don't think people get that. I think sometimes that comes with, you know, when we got into this, it took us 6 years to get to where we are now. We wanted to literally jump the people ahead by giving them the knowledge we acquired and also giving them this chance to see it in action very quickly. But still there's people, even from our jumpstart now, you can see the people that grasped onto it and said, yes, this is the way. And the other people that are trying to sort of game the system, but they're not getting the success. They're not getting the results that the other people are. And I don't know if that's going to ever kick in for those people. Don't know.
Yeah. Well, so you've had your group finished, what, in the spring of this year, of 2016?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you know, you say you still hear people talking about it, sharing recipes. And, you know, unlike our jump starts, which were very much one-off and kind of unsupported by an ongoing infrastructure, you're still there. There's still a school district. Are there plans to expand and scale and keep doing it?
Well, I've talked with my person with the insurance company, and he says, you know, we can't support it like we did last year, not for the same amount. But what I'm looking at doing is I've applied for grants, local grants, to hopefully defray the cost. I called around and came across a local research lab that does biometric screenings. And I proposed, you know, I said, you know, if I get another jumpstart going, because they said on their website they offer free biometric screenings. I go, that's great. So I sent an email off, and the president of the company called up and said, oh, we'd love to do that. Sure. So they're going to give us free biometric screenings before and after.
Wow.
So now I just have to work. If I get the funding to help defray the cost of the food again, that would be great. I'm looking to see if I can up it to like 50 people that I could have involved. I do have staff that have called and said, are you going to do that again this year? So I am working at trying to get that done again. So hopefully this time it will even be better, with better results, because a lot of the people that are also interested are following the people who are their friends who were in the Jumpstart last year. So it's having this ripple effect, and I want to keep that ripple effect going.
Right. So I'm curious about the insurance company saying, you know, well, we'll give you something, but we're not going to support it to the extent. So it sounds like that's not coming from a bean counter. Like, you know, like it seems like an insurance company would, if they ran the numbers on these people's improvement, would be like, we can make a shit ton of money if we get everyone eating this way, because they're still going to pay us and we won't have to pay out claims.
Well, you know, it's convincing systems, I think. And there's a couple things at play here. The consortium of health and wellness coordinators and the districts, this consortium that we're in, the insurance company is willing to give so much money each year to each district to try new initiatives. And it's sort of their way of, cheaply, okay, let's see what's out there that might work, that we might be able to put to good use. So they test something. That was cool. But they can't do it on a perpetual basis. So like he's saying, if you want to do something again this year, you may have to scale it down. Because and with the monies we have, that's just one focus of health and wellness for my district. So I'm also trying, for me, to spread not just that message, but there's other areas that we need to also work on as a district for health and wellness. And I'm sort of also playing the long game here. I don't want people to just come and think that I'm just that whole food plant-based guy who's trying to push his agenda, that I am there to help them become healthier and to show them the way and address other issues as well as whole food plant-based eating. And those politics are not an easy thing to play sometimes. Also, as health and wellness coordinator for the district, I do have a little input into student health. So how do I get changes in the school lunch program? How do I get changes into the students' daily health? That's an even harder nut to crack just because of all the government regulations on school food.
For example?
Milk. The only milk alternative you can provide is soy milk. That's the only one that the USDA says is comparable to milk. Now, if you don't take any money from the government for free lunch or free breakfast, then you could sort of do what you want. But all the school districts don't have the money for that. So since they take money, they can only offer that soy milk if they have it, which is typically more expensive than milk, so districts don't have it, or lactate. Those are the only options. You can't have almond milk. You can't offer it. You can't have any of the other non-dairy milks.
Huh. It seems like, you know, these big companies like Silk would be lobbying kind of hard.
You'd think, and maybe, but, you know, that dairy council is so strong, that dairy lobby. The other thing is, like, for instance, even a thing of juice is counted as a fruit. The only meat replacement allowed is beans, which isn't a bad thing, but tofu doesn't count, seitan doesn't count, none of those other things could possibly count. Just beans is the only protein replacement.
So we're asking our kids to like be serious Esselstyn followers. Like the one group that's kind of needs the most transitional foods aren't able to get them.
Right.
And about milk. So the rule is, like, do they have to serve milk if they're taking government aid?
Yes, and they have to offer the milk. Now, the kid doesn't have to take the milk, but they have to offer the milk.
Uh-huh.
And sort of how it's offered is, you got to take a milk.
Mm.
You know, so you have a little second grader, they're not going to say no to this adult who's saying, take a milk. Now, they may throw that milk out, some kids do, but there's that. I just was in a discussion about chocolate milk. Why serve chocolate milk? 22 grams of sugar in an 8-ounce portion. And you have your kids who get the free lunch and free breakfast, that this is their main nutrition. And they're getting that chocolate milk for breakfast, and they're getting it for lunch, 44 grams of sugar in a day. But the general thought in the world out there is, well, milk is good for you, even if it has sugar in it. And so you have to fight that battle as well, that, you know, why is the milk there in the first place? I was talking with, we have a new food service director. Is there any talk or discussion on the World Health Organization state that came out this past year about class 1 carcinogens in processed meats? And she goes, no, there hasn't been a lot of dialogue. So it's like that is even the harder road to go. But, you know, I figure if we can also work at changing the attitudes and diets of teachers, then there's a trickle-down effect there to families and trickle-down effect to students. And people will start changing their views on what is healthy. I think Americans in general have a skewed sense of what's healthy.
Yeah. Boy, I have a much better appreciation of what you mean by the long game. Wow.
And it's a tough one. I don't know. You know, I told our new food service director, I'd like to help her make changes in our food service program so we can be an example to other schools. And maybe making a new, I'm not thinking of the word, a new paradigm for school food. And it's tough because I don't expect to get meat out of there completely. I don't expect that to happen, at least while I'm teaching my last few years. But if I can make changes, if I can make sure that, you know, maybe every day there's a whole food plant-based entree in addition to what's offered, and that we're getting the kids to eat healthier. I did, through the Health and Wellness Committee and through my position as a teacher, convince the district to, I'm going into every second grade classroom talking about the 4 most important foods you can eat. And we're talking fruits, vegetable, grains, and legumes. And so I had my first kickoff with all the second graders yesterday. And I went into the cafeteria later in the day, and kids are holding up, look, Mr. Schmidt, I got fruit. Look, Mr. Schmidt, I have a whole wheat peanut butter sandwich, and peanuts are legumes. So they're very receptive at that age. So, they may not be able to change everything that they're getting at home, but if they're made aware that this is healthier for them, maybe they'll make better choices.
Right. Cool.
So I have hope for the younger generation. Hopefully we can help them out a little bit.
Cool. So I don't want to let you go without finding out what happened to you. Like, you and I met at Plantstock, and we were on the half a mile hike from hell that lasted like three or 4 days till we found our way back to the parking lot. You're obviously in good shape. What are you up to, and how's your health?
What was great was after that statin issue, I dropped all my statins. I mean, all my drug, all my, I'm off all prescription medicine for heart issues. I'm not taking a pill for anything, not even a daily aspirin. In fact, this past May, I had a, I read an article that people on a plant-based diet who are taking the daily aspirin are more susceptible to stroke. And I didn't know who to talk to. I was sort of, we moved last year. We're between doctors. I didn't know my doctor real well. And you always hear, oh, just write to Esselstyn or just write to McDougall. And so I did. I wrote to Dr. Esselstyn. His assistant wrote me back and said the doctor would like your phone to give you a call to answer your question. Next day, I get a call. Hi, I'm Dr. Esselstyn. I hear you have a question. And he said, I posed my question, you know, what about a daily aspirin? He goes, yep, if you've been eating this, like you say, for 2 years, this whole food plant-based diet, no oil, and you're taking a daily aspirin, you're more susceptible to stroke, macular degeneration, and stomach ulcers. He goes, if I were you, I wouldn't take the aspirin anymore. I go, so you're saying I can just stop this cold turkey right now? He goes, do you want macular degeneration? Do you want stomach ulcers? Do you want stroke? So I stopped aspirin that day, and that was the last thing I was on prescribed by my doctor. So I've been clean with that since May, not even a daily aspirin. My wife and I started taking up running this summer, and we felt like we were lead-footed in the beginning, and now we look forward. We typically do weight training one day and running on the opposite day. And in fact, right after this phone call, we're getting on our sneakers and we're going to go for our evening run.
All right. Well, I saw on Strava, you're right, your wife did a few days ago, did a solid 3.5 mile run near Buckland Park.
Yeah, we're both pretty comfortable. We're going to be running a 5K at our school district. They have one coming up in October. And we're both trying to get ourselves trained up for a 10K. We don't know what 10K yet, but that's what we're training for.
Awesome. So, sounds like it's working for you.
It's amazing. I feel like I found the fountain of youth. I'm as light as I was in high school, and I have more energy than I had in my 30s and 40s. And here I am almost, I'll be 58 in October, and I feel great.
Awesome. Well, it's so great to hear your personal story of dodging that bullet, getting a second lease on life, and becoming an athlete, and even more so to see you in this position of being able to, you know, slowly but surely affect the school system, and you know, maybe in 5 years there'll be, you know, every bureaucrat in Health and Human Services in Washington is going to be discussing the Victor Miracle and figuring out how to roll it out across the country. So I'm so grateful for the part that you're playing, and I wish you and Sherry all the best in all your upcoming pursuits.
Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure talking with you and having this opportunity to share.
Well, thanks a lot, Doug.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Big Change Program led by me and Josh Lajani, visit bigchangeprogram.com. And be sure to check out the show notes for today's episodes with links to everything we talked about at plantyourself.com/185. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 184 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. If you get the podcast but not my weekly email newsletter, you can get that at plantyourself.com as well. I include links to original articles, and I share episodes of my Tribe Well TV show as well. Big thanks to Plant Yourself podcast patrons Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Elizabeth Clifton, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Breathe, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, the Tinas, yay, Jen Vilkanovsky, David Bizek, the Mysterious Michelle X, Elspeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Landry, Josina, Julianne Rowland, Stu Dolnick, and Sarah Durkis Rhymes with Circus for your generous support of the podcast. Thanks also to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabati Don, Dance of Peace. You can find more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can share this and other episodes on social media. And via email, you can write a review on iTunes. Here's a couple of reviews that just came in. SelbyGirl6 says, great interviews. I recently discovered this podcast and have been thoroughly enjoying all the guests that Howard has had on. Great subject matter and questions asked and answered. It does seem that often it is very hard to hear the interviewee due to static or dial tones popping up or the call breaking up. Yeah, I'm aware of that, sadly. Also, the harp music in the intro is a little too much and drowns out what Howard has to say. Maybe he could turn down the volume just a notch on the harp. Otherwise, keep up the great work. All right, I've heard that from people too. I can't hear it, so I need to add a step to my workflow to get someone with better ears to listen to it, so I can duck the music sufficiently. I just love it. It's not harp, by the way. It's kora, K-O-R-A, this West African instrument that looks kind of like a, well, it doesn't really look like anything, but check it out. You can Google image it, K-O-R-A. But SelbyGirl6, thank you for that feedback. I will get on it. Becca D. from Australia says, my favorite podcaster. Plant Yourself is always a good listen. Howard chooses a range of fascinating people across a range of health and wellness topics, and he's consistently articulate, knowledgeable, and intuitive, bringing out the best in his guests. Oh, thank you so much, Becca D. from Australia. And of course, another really helpful way to support the show is to support me financially so that I can devote the time and resources into producing the show every week, finding the guests, preparing for the interviews, interviewing them, editing, making the choral music too loud, all the stuff that I do takes time and it takes me away from other things. So if you'd like to become a patron, you can pledge a one-time amount or an ongoing gift, and you can do that over on the right sidebar at plantyourself.com. In garden news, it's gotten really, really chilly over here the last few days. This morning it was 26 Fahrenheit, so we've been double covering the greens, and we're front-loading our consumption just in case a killing frost gets them, so we don't want to lose them all before they can get into our bodies and nourish us. In running news, it's been really, really cold here. It's 26 degrees this morning, so I decided to run after I record this intro to today's podcast. Running has been paying off big time. Last night, my Ultimate Frisbee team, the Killer Bees, won our Carborough Ultimate Championship for Fall League. And I've got to say, this running has really been paying off. For the first time in maybe a dozen years, or maybe more, maybe 20, 25 years, I felt like I was an asset and not a liability on the field. And it feels really good to be able to run with the young guys and hold my head up high and not have to like wheeze and take a knee in the middle of points and that sort of thing. So I highly recommend fitness. I wish I had discovered it sooner, but here I am, and here we all are. That's it for this week. So as always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.